Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And welcome, everybody. I'm with my co-host, Matt Kritzberg. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Excellent. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. We know it's been a little while since our last podcast, but with the news this week, we knew we had to get on airwaves. We had to have an emergency podcast. Matt, I need to hear your thoughts on the signing of Henrik Clementia minor league contract.
It's an earth-shattering move, and it's going to make the entire Braves system. It's going to turn it upside down, but somehow they're going to persevere, and they're going to make it through this move, and it dramatically improves the system where it'll remain a top-five farm system for a while.
I completely agree. The only question is, why did he not get a non-roster invite to spring training? I don't know what Anthopoulos is thinking. It's quite frankly unfathomable. Henrik Clementia, legend in the making.
Alex isn't even trying anymore.
That's right. I mean, sure, he signed Marcell Ozuna, therefore closing the final hole in the starting lineup. But you got to follow through here, Alex. You got to put the final pieces together, and you almost had it. But Clementia sitting at home with his contract, but won't be showing up until the big leaguers pack up and go north.
Boo. Amazing.
Yeah, Henrik Clementia, he's a low-level catcher, and we're glad to have him. But let's talk about spring training. First of all, as we talked before, Marcell Ozuna coming back was huge. I kind of never really doubted that he would come back, especially once the major outfielders kind of left the board.
No, the only thing that seemed to be surprising were the dollar amounts. 4 years, $65 million seems to be on the low side of what people had been predicting. I mean, there were rumblings out there he was asking for $22 million a year, which nobody thought he was going to get that kind of money. But it's opinion seemed to settle at kind of a $18 million per year value, and they got him for just over $16 a year. So, I mean, that's a good value, and hopefully Alex can put that other money to good use, and I'm anticipating we'll be hearing something about a Freddie Freeman extension in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I think they'll get that done before they come north. I thought it was a pretty decent meeting. I don't think the Braves really wanted to go certainly more than 4 years, but the dollars work. So, and it obviously works for Ozuna. He seemed very happy to be back. I know the team will be happy to have him back. But, you know, we're talking about minor leagues here, so let's keep to our wheelhouse. Let's talk about the minor league free agents here for a minute. Matt, I count here five minor league free agents that I think could have potential roles with the major league club come opening day. I don't think all of them will, but it'll be interesting to see how they impact the roster races here, and I want to get your thoughts on them. And I want to go to the infield first because that's an area of a lot of intrigue right now. Obviously, the starters are set with Freeman at first, Albies at second, Swanson at short, and unless they make a move outside the organization, I think Austin Riley is pretty much set at third at this point. But they brought on three minor league free agents, and these are all guys with extensive major league experience. And they are Ahiri Adrianza, who was most recently with the Minnesota Twins, Jason Kipnis, who most people know as an all-star from his Cleveland Indians days. He spent last year with the Chicago Cubs. And, of course, Pablo Sandoval, who actually ended the season with Atlanta last year. Now, against these guys, we have, obviously, Johan Camargo is going to be looking for a role as well. Where do you think these guys potentially could impact the Major League club?
If the season started today, Adrianza would be on the team because the team has to have a backup shortstop to Dansby Swanson, and there's really no other candidates out there. Camargo can't play shortstop. We've learned that in the past. He's a third baseman, second baseman. I've seen it touted that his positional versatility, but really he only plays two positions. to any real degree. You can stick him in the outfield, you can stick him at shortstop, but he doesn't play either one of those particularly well. So Adrianza would be your main candidate. He may not stick in that. They may end up picking up a different candidate instead somewhere along the way and before opening day, but he would definitely be in the mix. Sandoval, I just don't see him making the if he makes the team, something has gone horribly wrong. I mean, there'd, like, say, injuries to other candidates for third base, but he basically only plays third base. I think he might be able to play a little bit of first base, but and he can hit a little bit from the left side of the plate, but that's all he can provide. So he's not versatile, and for what may very likely be a fairly short bench early on, I just don't see him providing any real amount of value there. But Kipnis, I think it's a given he's going to make this squad. He still plays a decent second base, and he's played a little bit of center field and a little bit of first base, and I imagine the team's going to work with him in the spring. Here comes Ron Washington's name again, trying to get Kipnis some work at third base and maybe get him the corner outfield spots as well to try to give him a little more versatile. But, I mean, he's still got some pop in the left side of his bat. The StatCast numbers don't look great on him, but I saw somebody put out, I can't remember who it was, some figure of where all of his balls landed last season, and if he'd been playing in SunTrust Park, Truist Park, he would have gotten a couple extra home runs off of balls that would have been doubles elsewhere. So I think he's going to provide a little bit of pop this coming season.
Yeah, I think you got it. I think as of right now, I think Adrianza is a very strong candidate, and I think Kipnis is as well. I really do think the last spot may just come down between Sandoval and Camargo. And I think it's just going to be whichever one is hitting right-handed batting better. Camargo was not good last year. Sandoval really hasn't been great in a couple years, but he still hits right-handed hitters pretty well. I'm not so quick to dismiss Sandoval, I think. Camargo also still has options. So they could still stash him at third base down at Gwinnett. In fact, that's what I predicted in my third base write-up on Friday. But I think that's a very open question right now. We'll see. I know they obviously like Pablo Sandoval. I know they got very favorable reports from him from the alternate training site when they first signed him. And, of course, he joined the Braves extremely, extremely late in the season, I think literally on the last couple days. So we'll see how that goes. The other two minor league free agents that are interesting are both right-handed relievers. Now, we know that, as a matter of fact, the Braves are down two right-handed relievers. They did not re-sign Mark Melancon, who has gone on to sign with the San Diego Padres. And they have not re-signed Shane Green, who remains a free agent. But they did pick up as minor league free agents two veterans, Carl Edwards Jr. and Nate Jones. Matt, you have any thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, Nate Jones is just kind of a throw something against the wall to see if it sticks. He hasn't been very good the last few years, and I don't know if he's going to – I mean, if he has a great spring, hey, he could very well make the roster, but I just don't see it happening. Carl Edwards Jr. is very interesting. He had, as a combination of an injury and ineffectiveness last season, it wasn't a serious injury. I believe it was a right forearm strain, but it was nothing that serious. But I imagine in a short season like last year, it kind of threw everything off, his preparation, his ability to come back in a quick fashion. So if he shows that he could overcome that injury, I think he might be a pretty safe bet to make this bullpen. And kind of go along with that as well, Victor Arano, who, I mean, he's on the 40-man roster, so he's on there right now. He had an elbow injury as well, but he had arthroscopic surgery, I believe, early in 2019 and just kind of threw off his whole season. He hasn't gotten all of his velocity back. But the thing about Arano is he has options. So if they determine that Edwards performs well this spring, that they could just send Arano down to Gwinnett with no consequences and keep Edwards on the roster. And it's a pretty good chance he makes it if he's healthy.
Yeah, I like the Arano pickup a lot. The only thing that, you know, concerns me a little bit is, you know, obviously he could have been optioned, but the Phillies needing a roster spot with some signees, they waived him, and that's how the Braves picked him up as a waiver wire transaction. So, I mean, the Phillies know him better than anybody, and they elected to waive him. But if he's right, I mean, that could be a potential huge pickup. And like you, I like Edwards a lot too. So I think Edwards and Arano, if, you know, the big caveat, if they're both healthy, if they can both get right, I almost hate to say this, but could they actually be an upgrade over Melanson and Green?
Well, it seems like what Alex is looking for, he's looking for relievers who can miss bats. As effective as Melanson was last season and generated a lot of ground balls, his strikeout rate was not great at all. Like, he was having to play, you know, to pitch to contact and rely on his defense behind him. In the late innings of the game, that's not really what you want. You really want to strike out guys that can't put the ball in play. So if Edwards Jr., Arano, even Nate Jones, I mean, if any of them can, they have bigger strikeout numbers. And if they those guys can be an upgrade, then that's where it'll go from here. But Shane Green was kind of in that same boat. He wasn't a big strikeout pitcher last year either. And even beyond that, you also have an open spot with Jeremy Walker being DFA'd by the organization. Of course, they may end up re-signing him at some point, but it appears that his shoulder injuries from last season may be a little more serious than we saw last season.
Yeah, I was pretty bummed out about that. I know we're both Jeremy Walker fans, so hopefully he will latch on with somebody here. Hopefully Atlanta, but if not, you know, good luck to Jeremy Walker. He was a heck of a lot of fun to watch come up in the organization.
And especially coming out of nowhere from as a back-end starter to a pretty solid reliever.
That's right. All right, so let's talk about the other non-roster invitees. Now, a lot of these, as usual, are prospects that, you know, probably have no chance of making the squad unless, you know, something catastrophic happens, which in the era of COVID, hey, you never know. But, you know, all things being equal, these guys don't have probably a chance to make the open-ended roster, but it's kind of interesting to see who they invite to get a taste of the major league experience here for a little while. Let's start in the outfield. Probably the biggest, no surprise, Drew Waters, again, with the invite. And then also Michael Harris, who is very young, and Justin Dean, who did not get an invite in 2020, which was a little bit surprising. He finally gets one here. Any thoughts on these guys?
No, I think it's a lot about just getting them some experience. I mean, of course, last season, Michael Harris got a lot of experience at the alternate site, playing with either borderline major leaguers, AAA players, and even some MLB players when they were down in that level. Obviously, he's not going to start anywhere near there. He'll either start in high A or double A, but I think it's good to give him a taste probably for a few weeks or so. And now I'm kind of wondering how the cuts are going to work this spring as well, because I know they had they usually let go or send them down, reassign them to the minor league site, but there is no site to reassign them to. So did they just stick with these players all the way through spring training? Or, I mean, it's going to be kind of curious this year, because the other minor leaguers, the double A players on down, won't report until these players leave. So I think that's going to be kind of interesting to see how all that's handled. But and you can see some of these guys are mainly being like fill-ins to come in late in games during spring training once the MLB players have gotten their work in.
Yeah, I'm assuming there is a minor league camp. It would just be the remaining AAA roster, right? So these guys, if they are, you know, if they are quote unquote sent down, they just move over to the minor league camp. This is kind of more of a, you know, it's almost like just where's your locker, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the catchers a little bit. So we know on the 40-man roster, there's obviously Travis d'Arnaud and Alex Jackson and William Contreras, with Jackson and Contreras probably competing for the second catcher spot. Then the non-roster invitees, Shea Langeliers, Logan Brown, and Jonathan Morales. First of all, obviously you need lots of catchers, so that's why we've got lots of catchers. But what do you think of Shea Langeliers' chances here of making some noise? Because I've seen some people on Twitter and such say, hey, is he a possibility to maybe break into this, into the conversation here?
No, he's, I mean, He had a great spring last year, but there was never any threat that he was going to make the MLB roster, and I think that's the same case this year as well. It's just been getting him some experience with the MLB pitchers. Most likely, he's probably going to start at AA Mississippi, possibly Rome, but I think it's going to be more like Mississippi. And I think that he'll be in camp for a few weeks, get a lot of work in around the other guys. But and of course, Brown and Morales, they're more just kind of filler. In fact, with they'll have six catchers in camp during a normal season. They probably would have had seven or eight catchers in camp. But with the limited numbers this year, that's all they chose to bring along. But most of these guys are just going to be here to get extra work for the pitchers and to fill in late in games. But yeah, Langoliers, it's just going to be a matter of, hey, let's get him some work in and see if he can impress like he did last spring.
All right, as far as the infield, there's some interesting guys here. Bryce Ball, C.J. Alexander, and Braden Shoemake. I think Matt, you'd agree with me. Ball and Alexander probably don't have shots here. It's interesting, Alexander getting the invite here. Alexander wasn't at the alternate training site, and he didn't get an instructional invite either, but I assume that he's been working out himself over in the shutdown and has done a good job keeping ready for them, at least enough for them to have him come back and be on the major league invitee list here.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty positive vote of confidence for Alexander because he's basically coming off two lost seasons. Obviously, the no minor league season last year, and he wasn't at the alternate site, and then his injury-riddled 2019 campaign. So they must see something that's like, hey, let's bring him into camp and let him show out a little bit. And that's in kind of contrast, and I'm sure we were going to hit on it, but somebody else that we thought might be here but isn't is Grayson Genesta. And then he wasn't invited to the alternate site last year either. So I'm kind of wondering where that leaves him within the organization, that maybe his stock's not exactly too high right now. But we'll see whenever the season starts. I imagine Genesta would be at AA Mississippi as well as Alexander. And we'll see what they've got to provide. But I like the chances for Alexander as far as the vote of confidence and the positive influence that this could have on him going forward.
Yeah, speaking of guys not here, also in the infield category, Vaughn Grissom, who, like Michael Harris, very young alternate training site people, Michael Harris got the invite, Vaughn Grissom didn't. Anything we should read in that, or do you think this might be more of we want to get him one-on-one focus, maybe for a position change or something like that?
Yeah, because, I mean, his natural position, shortstop, and I think obviously they're looking to move him at third base at some point, and there's probably just not enough innings on the infield this spring. I mean, you're going to have a big battle. I mean, obviously Austin Riley's out in front, but you're also going to have Sandoval. You're going to have Camargo out there. You're going to have Alexander all looking at third base. So there's really not a lot of innings there. And obviously, Grissom's not going to make the team as a backup shortstop, but you're going to have to give innings to those guys as well. And I'm sure Sean Casimir will be filling in late in games. You got Braden Shoemake out there. I'm sure they're going to try to give a lot of innings to this spring, try to get him prepared, because, I mean, he could be contributing as early as this season at some point.
Yeah, let's talk about Shoemake just a little bit. There's been a lot of talk about him this week. There was an interview with him on Fangraphs.com. Where he talked about his hitting approach a little bit, and he kind of shed some light a little bit on what the organization has been having him do since he's been with the club. And I know a good friend of ours, Dan Keats, really likes Shoemake and thinks that he should be in the conversation as far as being a utility option this year. I don't think that is in the cards pretty much at all. But nevertheless, I think he may be a little bit closer than some people think he is.
Yeah, and when you kind of look at Dansby Swanson's contract situation, he lost his arbitration case this week. He'll be making $6 million this year, but he only has two more years of control before he hits free agency. So they're going to have to work on another plan to get somebody ready, because there's going to be some very high-dollar free agent shortstops out there, which I'm sure the Braves do not want to play in that zip code. So I think their plan is to get Shoemake prepared and ready, and let's say at some point this season, if Dansby goes down with an injury, who's to say Shoemake might not be the guy if it's far enough along in the season.
When he was drafted, there was a lot of discussion about making him maybe a third baseman or a center fielder or something like that. But that all seems to have gone away. I was very impressed with him in Rome in 2019 as far as defensively. I found it hard to believe that people were already looking to move him off that position. Seems like everybody's kind of come around to the idea, no, he really is a shortstop, even if he gets bigger, which apparently he's over 200 pounds now, which I think when he was drafted, he was like 190, 185 or something like that. So, and he talked about how he's been, you know, gaining mass, but hasn't really lost his quickness yet, which is pretty much exactly what you want to hear. So I thought that was a really good interview.
Yeah, and also in that interview, they asked him about a possible positional change. He said the Braves have never brought up any kind of position change whatsoever. He said, I'm a shortstop, and they've never talked to me about anything else. So that kind of tells me right there that they're not looking at him as a super utility guy or anything like that. It's like, hey, he's a shortstop.
I don't know. Fans, you may want to start thinking about the possibility of Dansby Swanson maybe having 1-2 years left with the organization and then leaving and Braden Shoemake taking over, because that certainly seems to be what the direction there is. Obviously, anything can happen. You know, 2 years is a long time. So, but I don't necessarily think Dansby Swanson is maybe the core member of the Atlanta Braves, as maybe some people are thinking.
No, and you can kind of read the tea leaves a couple of years from now, and you think about, hey, Acuna, Freeman, Ozuna are going to be making big money. They don't want to pay $10 million plus to every single position player. I mean, obviously, Ozzy Albies is under a nice contract for the next few years, so they're going to want to get a couple position players out there who aren't making a whole lot of anything, and Shoemake would definitely fit in that category. I just don't see them wanting to pay Dansby Swanson $10 million plus on a long-term deal.
All right, so let's go on to the non-roster pitchers here. I think we'll agree most of these guys are... I don't see any of these guys really having a shot here. There's a ton of pitchers just on the 40-man roster that obviously will get the first looks here. But nevertheless, some intriguing names. Finally, Deisbel Hernandez gets a non-roster invite. I think we were a little surprised he didn't get one last year. He has been pitching in the Mexican League over the winter. And I actually saw an interview. It was in Spanish, so I had to kind of painstakingly... translated a little bit, and it's interesting. He was saying that his entire time there, he was only throwing fastball. He was working completely just on fastball control and location, that he did not want to throw his slider, which is his primary strikeout pitch. It all went well. I mean, he only threw about a little less than 10 innings, but throwing all fastballs, I think he still struck out something like 11 people.
Yeah, I anticipate he's going to be closing for Double A Mississippi at the beginning of the season. But I mean, once again, by the end of this season, he could be in the mix for a bullpen spot if he performs well there.
Yeah, and then a couple more higher minor league guys that we kind of like: Kurt Hoekstra and Connor Johnstone. I expect both these guys will probably be in the mix for a Triple-A assignment, maybe Double-A, because their numbers are pretty – like I said, there's a ton of guys on the 40-man roster, and they all will need some place to pitch. But I suspect they'll be in the Triple-A mix here. And Hoekstra is still really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he just kind of just lingers around the organization. But I imagine, like you said, I mean, if they have to push down the likes of, let's say, Bryce Wilson and/or Kyle Wright at the beginning of the season, some of these relievers that have options like Waskar Ynoa, that's going to involve having to push some other players down. And Hoekstra, Johnstone, that might push them down to Mississippi. So they're going to be in flux there at the beginning of the season, if for no other reason other than the roster crunch.
Yeah, and you can't help but think maybe they're in the major league camp to make sure they get major league looks, maybe some minor wheeling and dealing early in the season. Just throwing that out there. Nolan Kingham is an interesting name on the non-roster invitee list. He's a guy we've talked about some kind of some highs and lows, but the highs have been really high. You know, some really strong games for High A Florida back in 2019. He made it up to Mississippi, kind of a workhorse, kind of back end of the rotation kind of guy. It's interesting that they have him maybe getting some major league looks here as well.
Yeah, I anticipate, depending on how it all shakes out, that probably Jesse De La Cruz will probably be number one in the Mississippi rotation to start the season, depending on the roster crunch. Nolan Kingham's probably going to be number two. So, I mean, he's going to work his way. If he performs well, he's going to work his way up to Gwinnett at some point this season. It just depends on the numbers game. But I'm sure that's part of it. Just want to kind of get him ready for the upper levels of the organization.
And maybe also in that Mississippi rotation, Freddie Tarnock also in the mix here as a non-roster invitee. Really happy to see that. I know we've seen some video of him over the shutdown in short stints, you know, throwing in the high 90s, which was really good to see. He usually has been working in the low 90s as a starter. Really was kind of hoping for a little bit more than that, so maybe he's found something mechanically that allow him to kind of sit in that mid-90 range, which I think would be a happy medium.
Yeah, among the Braves minor league pitchers, I've seen a lot of positive talk from various scouts and prospect writers regarding Tarnock this offseason, so I think he's got a real good shot of making something happen this season. And there won't be a lot of pressure on him, I would think, at Mississippi. There's going to be other prospects in line ahead of him, so he won't have the pressure of, hey, if I perform well, I'll get moved up real quickly. But I mean, he can just kind of grind his way through the season and let himself develop and not have to worry about what lies ahead for him.
And speaking of guys with talk around them, two guys that ended 2019 with Rome but have gone to the alternate training site, have gotten instructional invites, they've been pitching a lot, and obviously we've been talking about Victor Vodnik for a while now, but also William Woods, who really it's really hard for a prospect to not play and not pitch and gain buzz, but if anybody has, it's him. The videos that came out around him throwing with good velocity, I liked him when I saw him in Rome. Didn't see that kind of zip on his fastball, so he may have found another gear or something mechanically. Certainly the Braves have taken notice, and they are both in camp.
Yeah, the William Woods thing is really impressive because it's almost like it's kind of a self-made thing on his part. I mean, he put out videos last summer showing him throwing, topping out 98, 99 on his fastball, and not too long after that's when he got invited to the alternate site. So, I mean, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to get attention, and he kind of took advantage of the oddball 2020 season to make a name for himself and get some attention and get himself into the mix.
And then the last two guys, I put these guys a little bit separately because I do think there is a slight chance. Now, I'm talking about like a 5% chance. All these other guys, I'd say the chance is at or near zero, again, barring something catastrophic. But these guys, you know, you can kind of squint and maybe see like a 5% chance of maybe these guys making it. And one is the outfielder Trey Harris out of McEachern High School. Here, right down the road from me. So, the outfield situation behind the three starters is pretty not great. We've got obviously Ender Inciarte and a new pickup, Abraham Almonte, both kind of more glove guys than bat guys. I think Jason Kipnis may help out in that area by being able to play some left field a little bit, but as far as having an outfielder with a bat, there's just really not anyone there right now. Trey Harris, one thing we know is that kid can hit. I don't think it's likely, but could he actually get a long look here?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a non-zero chance. Let's say if Ender comes in and he hits about like he did last season, and Almonte, I mean, if he doesn't produce during spring training, then of course there's other variables as well. Is there a DH that comes along? If there's a DH that comes along, somebody has to play left field. And if not those guys, then why not Harris? I mean, his defense isn't stellar, but I mean, it's not the Ozuna level or anything like that. And with two plus outfielders out there alongside him, I mean, they could definitely help cover for any deficiencies that may exist. So, I mean, that's not a non-zero. There's a non-zero possibility he does make the roster in some way.
And the other guy I have down here is a non-zero chance here. It's we've got a lot of left-handed pitchers in camp. It's one of the deepest areas in the in the organization. I mean, to the point where right now, barring an injury, I don't see a major league roster spot for Sean Newcomb, which is kind of amazing. But Thomas Burroughs, this guy we've had in the organization for a while now. He's been up to AAA and has had mixed results. He was a spring training invitee last year, but was not invited to the alternate training site, which I thought was kind of odd. So he's back with the as a major league spring training invitee here. What are your thoughts on Mr. Burroughs?
And for in the case of Burroughs, I think a lot of it can be attributed to the baseball differential. It's like every time he was in Mississippi, he would dominate, but then he'd move up to Gwinnett and get just bombed. And there was a different baseball at the time being used between the two levels. So I wonder if some of that may have come into play for him. And now that they're talking about deadening the ball at MLB, and I know there's some things about they've still got some leftover juice, yeah, nuclear balls and happy fun balls out there, and they're going to have to use those up first. So that's going to probably throw some numbers off the beginning of the season. But Burroughs could, if he's gotten adjusted to the ball in some way, maybe that can help bring him into play. And like you said, there's a lot of left-handers out there, but one or two of them, if they're ineffective or go down with injuries, who's to say he can't be like a six-inning guy? And like I said about Newcomb, I mean, it's just weird. I mean, you hear nothing about Newcomb this spring. He's there. He's on the 40-man roster, but you don't hear him. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be in play for the starting rotation, and don't even really hear him in the mix for a bullpen spot, and he's got an option remaining, so he could be sent down. So, I mean, I would think that puts he and Burroughs on a kind of equal playing field.
Right. Just even if they carry four left-handed relievers, I mean, you figure Matzik, Minter, Smith, those three have got them knocked down, assuming they're healthy. Then you got Grant Dayton, who, you know, other than his implosion he had coming in for Kyle Wright in that awful game three of the NLCS last year, he actually had a really solid year for the Braves, and I think he would have an inside track. But if for some reason he faltered, maybe you see Newcomb there, but, you know, maybe not. Newcomb looked really bad last year, so I think he's got a lot to work on. We'll see what happens there, but I think that's the situation where maybe you see a Thomas Burroughs, if he has a super good spring, maybe force the organization to make some tough decisions.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, but I think it might be on the cusp of something happening. I've always thought of him as kind of Luis Gohar light, where basically it's fastball slider with a really good wipeout slider, and just a matter of can he get adjusted to a certain baseball. I don't know if that was all the issue, but I think it did certainly enter into the equation.
Before we wrap this up, I wanted to get your thoughts on the new league structure that was unveiled this past week. So, not surprisingly, every team that was invited, all 120 teams that were invited to be affiliates, accepted. They've signed their PDAs. So we now officially know 100% what teams are going to be in minor league affiliates. The Braves affiliates were set. Not surprisingly, the Atlanta Braves, the owners of Mississippi, Gwinnett, and Rome, all agreed with themselves that that was a great deal, and that they were happy to sign the deal with themselves. Augusta, I think, was very happy to now be a Braves affiliate. So they are playing respectively in the very easy to say AAA East, Southeast Division for Gwinnett, and then for Mississippi, and everybody's favorite AA South Division. And then with Rome, you have the High A East Southern Division, and then finally Augusta in the Low A East Southern Division. And I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, that the nomenclature there is just so easy to comprehend.
Yeah, and as was stated through various sources, especially on Baseball America, that these are just placeholder names that you could very well see new league names, and very soon, once they sell off the rights to them, because hey, MLB, they got to make their money. But I imagine they're going to be aiming for, say, regional type businesses to come into the mix to sponsor those league names and make themselves a nice little chunk of money. So, say if the Home Depot AAA league comes along, or Chick-fil-A, or I mean, I don't know if they're aiming at that level, but I'm sure they can. I'm sure they'll find some sponsors one way or another to take over those spots. But I mean, even that might be better than having Double A South Division and just these really oddball names right now. I mean, I'm until further notice, I'm still calling them the Southern League and International League.
Oh, there you go. International League of Pancakes.
Woo!
There you go. There you go. MLB, you can have that one for free. All right. So let's talk about the schedule. The schedules also came out, and they are super bizarre, but very much with the idea of trying to limit travel as much as possible in the in this COVID era. Every series is now a 6-game series. Everybody travels on the same day. I think everybody has Monday off, except I think maybe the league formerly known as the Pacific Coast League, which I think travels on Wednesday for some reason.
Right.
But so you travel on Monday, you play a 6-game series, travel on Monday, play a 6-game series, wash, rinse, and repeat. The schedules are completely out of balance. The Rome Braves, for example, have a schedule where they're playing their new division rivals, the Bowling Green Hot Rods. They're playing them 30% of the schedule, and that is mostly due to Bowling Green just being completely out on their own, not really near any other divisional team. I wonder if they go back and maybe rethink that whole division at some point. But as of right now, their closest division rival is Rome, and it's 269 miles away.
And I think what's going to help, what actually helps Rome in that instance, is that gets them out of having to go make the New York trips. I think it's at Jersey Shore and a couple other teams in the Northeast. It kind of gets them away from having to do that. So although fans may get sick of seeing Bowling Green over and over again, hey, it beats having to make long trips to the Northeast a couple times a season.
Hey, and it sure beats last year where there was no baseball at all. So, hey, we love the Bowling Green Hot Rods, and we will happily take them at State Mutual Stadium anytime. The Rome does have one trip north, and it happens kind of early, and they'll play Wilmington and Aberdeen, which are new teams. One is moving over from, what was it? Wilmington was in, what, the Eastern League before?
I think so.
Yeah, and then Aberdeen was actually a low A-minus team from the New York Penn League. So of all the leagues, kind of the High A East Division is the kind of the Frankenstein of the group. You got a little bit from, I think, 5 different leagues kind of melding in here, including the South Atlantic and the Carolina League. I don't know what they're going to end up calling this league. Hopefully something will be called something like the Carolina League, because that's such a cool name. It has so much history behind it. But I guess we'll see. The problem, of course, being that so many teams aren't actually in Carolina.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how regionalized everything is outside of that that Rome Bowling Green arrangement. I mean, see Gwinnett, I mean, they're playing within their division for the entirety of the season, but at least they'll get to alternate between 7 different teams. So it's Durham, Memphis, Columbus, Jacksonville, which has just moved up from Double A, Louisville, Nashville, and Charlotte. So they'll alternate between teams, so they'll get some different looks throughout the season. So I think that works out pretty well for them. That'll kind of minimize that travel. And then you go down to Mississippi. There's not a lot of changes for Mississippi, really, because the only two teams that left the league are Jackson, Tennessee, who no longer exist, and then with Jacksonville moving up to AAA, it just shrinks from a 10-team league to an 8-team league. The couple of oddball things that happened to Mississippi, though, is they finished, of course, the season starts on May 4th for AA levels on down, which works out very well for teams like Mississippi who will be at home. They'll get to take advantage of Star Wars Promotion Day. They play the entirety of the month of May in the state of Mississippi, where they have one 6-game set in Biloxi, and they spend the rest of the month at home. and 42 out of their first 48 games are in the state of Mississippi. They only have two really reasonably long trips during the course of the season. They have a 500-mile trip to Tennessee to face the Smokies, the Cubs farm team. And at the last series of the season, they'll have to travel 380 miles to Chattanooga. But everything else is less than 300 miles. I mean, they're day trips. So on those days, on Mondays when they'll be traveling, it won't be huge trips. I mean, you're not talking about any serious jet lag. I mean, in past years for Mississippi, they would have to travel to Jacksonville to face the Jumbo Shrimp. And that's a solid 10, 11-hour drive. So, I mean, there was some serious wear and tear going on. They had to make that trip multiple times a season because they were in the same division. So they greatly reduced their travel there. The one negative as far as Mississippi's schedule goes is the Rocket City Trash Pandas up in northern Alabama are just now starting to play this season, and they and Mississippi, through scheduling quirk, won't play each other at all, which I'm a little disappointed in.
I am terribly disappointed in that. I was really hoping to go catch a Braves Trash Panda game, traveling over to Huntsville for that. But I'll have to instead try to see them when they swing over to Chattanooga or Birmingham or Montgomery. But was really hoping to catch the inaugural Trash Panda season.
Yeah, and but every team in the what was formerly known as the Southern League has a quirk like that. They have one opponent they don't play at all during the course of the season. So that just happens to be the one that shook out for Mississippi.
I did appreciate the Mississippi Braves Twitter account sending Sarah McLaughlin's "I Will Remember You" video to the Trash Pandas there to commemorate their shared missing each other in the night here for this schedule.
I will just have to hold off on that heated rivalry for another season.
All right, man. Well, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No. Well, just kind of go over the scheduling real quick. AAA starts April 6th. So they'll start pretty close to when they would have started already, and the season will go until September 19th. From the AA levels on down, starting May 4th, like I said, I mean, if you're at home that weekend, make some good money as a minor league club, especially with limited seating, at least initially. And they will also finish up on September 19th. So all the minors shut down September 19th this season. So they'll go an extra about 3 weeks and get a little bit of extra coin in their pocket because it'll still be warmer weather in most areas. And it beats I'm sure most teams would rather choose to have that than rather the first 3 weeks or so of April when weather's not always the best and have lower temperatures, and especially when school's still in session.
Right. And of course, the biggest question right now is just what kind of crowds they'll be allowed to have in these games. It may vary by state. As of right now, California and the state of Washington will not allow crowds basically any size. We'll see if the spread of the vaccine accelerates enough that maybe they relent on that. Georgia, I haven't heard, or Mississippi, I haven't heard exactly what the plan is right now. I know in spring training, I think they said they were going to allow, 25% capacity? So I suspect it'll probably be something like that, and maybe gradually expanding as the season progresses. So if you want to go see minor league ball, I know most places haven't started selling tickets yet, probably waiting to hear exactly how many tickets they'll be allowed to sell. But you know that it's going to go first to people who bought tickets in 2020 and then didn't get refunds. They're going to get the first dibs on the seats and using their stored credit to get seats. If it expands past that, then it's going to go to new season tickets holders soon. So just keep that in mind if you're interested in minor league ball. Tickets may be a little hard to come by, especially early on.
Yep. And so, I mean, there's going to be a little good with bad, but hey, at least we got a season this year and we have something to talk about.
Oh, yeah, man. All right. With that, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Hopefully, we'll be on a more regular schedule-ish coming up here. I'm not sure what it's going to look like for spring training, but then when the minor league season actually starts up, hopefully we'll be on a little bit more. But we appreciate your patience, and we appreciate you tuning on with us. Matt, by the way, you sound fantastic.
Well, thank you. I have some fancy new equipment here. I'm putting a little bit of effort into this and try to at least arrive in the 21st century with the equipment rather than the stuff I bought at Walmart.
Okay, well, the batteries on my headphones just died, so I can't hear you, Matt. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. Everyone, have a good one.
Have a good one.
No. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. J'ai allumé le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie.